As I already told you, among the many teachings then current in Babylon concerning the question of the beyond, there were two, having nothing in common with each other, that had a large number of adherents. And it was precisely these two teachings, passing from generation to generation of your favorites, which began to confuse their sane being mentation, already muddled enough without that. Although the details of both these teachings underwent changes in the course of their transmission through the generations, the fundamental ideas contained in them remained the same and have even reached contemporary times. One of these teachings, with adherents in Babylon, was the dualistic, and the other the atheistic. Thus, one of them proved that beings have a soul, and the other quite the opposite, namely, that they have nothing of the kind. In the dualistic or idealistic teaching, it was said that within the coarse body of the being man, there is a fine and invisible body, which is the soul. This fine body of man is immortal, that is to say, it is never destroyed. It was said further that this fine body, or soul, has to make a corresponding payment for every action of the physical body, whether voluntary or involuntary, and that every man, at birth, already consists of these two bodies, the physical body and the soul. According to this teaching, as soon as a man is born, two invisible spirits perch upon his shoulders. On his right shoulder sits a spirit of good, called an angel, and on his left a spirit of evil, called a devil. From the very first day, these spirits record in their notebooks all the manifestations of the man. The spirit sitting on the right shoulder recording all his so-called good manifestations or good deeds, and the spirit sitting on the left shoulder his evil ones. It is among the duties of these two spirits to prompt a man and compel him to carry out as many manifestations as possible in their respective domains. The spirit on the right constantly strives to make the man refrain from those acts which are in the domain of the opposite spirit, and perform as many acts as possible in his own domain. And the spirit on the left does the same thing, but the other way around. In this strange teaching, it was further said that those two rival spirits are always contending with each other, and that each strives with might and main to make the man perform more of those actions which are under his charge. When the man dies, these spirits leave his physical body on the earth and take his soul up to God, who exists somewhere up in heaven. There, up in heaven, this God sits, surrounded by his devoted angels and archangels, with a pair of scales suspended in front of him. On each side of the scales, spirits stand on duty. On the right stand the spirits who are called the servants of paradise, and these are the angels. And on the left stand the servants of hell, and these are the devils. The spirits who have been sitting on the man's shoulders all his life bring his soul after death to God, and God then takes from their hands the notebooks where the notes of all the man's actions have been written down, and places them on the pans of the scales. On the right pan he puts the notebook of the angel, and on the left the notebook of the devil. Depending on which pan sinks lower, God commands the spirits on duty on that side to take the soul into their charge. In the charge of the spirits on duty on the right is the place called paradise. This paradise is a realm of indescribable beauty and splendiferousness. It abounds in magnificent fruits and innumerable many-scented flowers, and chanting sounds of cherubic songs and seraphic music constantly echo in the air. Many other marvels were enumerated, whose outer effects, according to the perceptions and cognitions abnormally inherent in the three-brain beings of that strange planet, were likely to evoke, as they say, great satisfaction in them. That is, the satisfaction of those needs that are unworthy of three-centered beings, which drive from their presences everything without exception that was put into them by our common Father. The spirits on duty to the left of the scales, who according to this Babylonian teaching are the devils, are in charge of what is called hell. As for hell, it was said to be a place without a trace of vegetation, scorched by unimaginable heat, and without a single drop of water. In this hell, there constantly echo sounds of frightful cacophony and infuriated insults. All around stand instruments of torture of every conceivable sort, from the rack and wheel to machines for lacerating bodies and rubbing them with salt, and so on and so forth. In this Babylonian idealistic teaching, it was explained in detail that for his soul to enter paradise, a man must constantly strive while on earth to provide as much material as possible for the notebook of the spirit angel perched on his right shoulder, since otherwise there would be more material for the record of the spirit on his left shoulder, in which case his soul would inevitably be cast into that most awful hell. Here Hasin could constrain himself no longer, and suddenly interrupted Beelzebub with the following words: "And which of their manifestations do they consider good, and which bad?" Beelzebub gave his grandson a very strange look, and shaking his head replied, "As regards the question of which being manifestations are considered good on your planet, and which bad, two distinct ways of understanding, having nothing in common, have existed from the most ancient times up to the present day. The first way of understanding exists there and passes from one generation to another through such three-brained beings as were the members of the learned society of Acheldans on the continent of Atlantis, and through such as those who, several centuries later after the second Transapalnian perturbation, were beginning, although in a different manner, to acquire almost the same data at the root of their common presences, and who were called initiates. This way of understanding is expressed there as follows: every deed of a man is good, in the objective sense, if it is done according to his conscience, and every deed is bad, if from it he later experiences remorse. The second way of understanding arose soon after the wise invention of the great King Canutian, and passing from generation to generation through ordinary beings there, it gradually spread over almost the entire planet under the name of morality. Here it will be interesting to note one particularity of this morality, which was grafted onto it at the very beginning and ultimately became part and parcel of it. Just what this particularity of terrestrial morality is, you can easily represent to yourself and understand if I tell you that both inwardly and outwardly it has acquired the property that is unique to the being named Chameleon. And the strangest and most original aspect of this particularity of the morality there, especially of the contemporary morality, is that its functioning automatically depends on the moods of the local authorities. And these moods, in their turn, depend also automatically on the state of the four sources of action existing there under the names of mother-in-law, digestion, John Thomas, and cash. The second Babylonian teaching, which also had many followers, passing through the generations, reached your contemporary favorites and was based on one of the atheistic theories of that period. In this teaching of the terrestrial Hasnamusian candidates of that time, it was stated over and over again that there is no God in the world, much less any soul in man, and that therefore all the arguments and discussions about the soul are nothing but the delirium of sick visionaries. It was further maintained that there exists in the world only one particular law of mechanics, according to which everything that exists passes from one form into another. That is to say, the results arising from any preceding causes are progressively transformed and become the causes of subsequent results. And therefore, man also is a result of some preceding cause, and in his turn must serve as the cause of some kind of result. Moreover, it was said that all supernatural phenomena, even those actually perceptible to most people, are also nothing but results ensuing from this special law of mechanics. The full comprehension of this law depends on the progressive, impartial, and all-round knowledge of its manifold details, which can be revealed to a pure reason in proportion to its development. But as regards the reason of man, this is merely the sum of all the impressions he has perceived, from which there gradually arise in him data for the possibility of comparisons, deductions, and conclusions. As a result of all this, he obtains more information concerning various facts around him repeatedly occurring in the same way, which in their turn serve in the general organization of man as material for the formation of definite convictions. And from all this is formed man's reason, that is to say, his own subjective psyche. Whatever may have been said in these two teachings about the soul, and whatever maleficent means were prepared by those learned beings assembled there from almost the entire planet for the gradual transformation of the reason of their descendants into a veritable mill of nonsense, the outcome need not have been, in the objective sense, a total calamity. But the full objective terror lay in the fact that there later resulted from these teachings a great evil, not only for their descendants, but maybe even for everything that exists. The point is that during this great agitation of minds in the city of Babylon, when these learned beings, through their collective wiseacring, had acquired in their presence a mass of new data for Hasnamusian manifestations, in addition to those they already had. And when they dispersed and went home to their own countries, they began, of course, unconsciously, to propagate everywhere like contagious bacilli all those notions which together finally and utterly destroyed the last remnants and even the traces of the results of the holy labors of the very saintly Asherah Shemash. The remnants, that is to say, of those holy labors consciously suffered, which he intentionally actualized in order to create the special external conditions of ordinary being existence, in which alone the maleficent consequences of the properties of the organ kunda buffer could gradually disappear from the presences of your favorites, so that in their place there could gradually be acquired those properties befitting every three-brain being, whose whole presence is an exact likeness of the whole universe. Another result of the diverse wiseacrings on the question of the soul by those learned beings in the city of Babylon was that soon after my fifth appearance in person on the surface of your planet, this center of culture of theirs, the incomparable and indeed magnificent Babylon, was in its turn, as is said there, completely swept from the face of the earth down to its very foundations. Not only was the city of Babylon itself destroyed, but also everything acquired and accomplished by the beings who had existed there for many of their centuries. In the name of justice, I must say here that the initiative for the destruction of the holy labors of Ashad Shemash did not spring from those learned terrestrial beings then assembled in the city of Babylon, but rather from the invention of a well-known learned being who had existed on the continent of Asia several centuries before these Babylonian events. His name was Lentrohemsenin, and this being, whose highest being part was coded into a definite unit and perfected to the required gradation of objective reason, became one of those 313 eternal Hasnamus individuals who now exist on the small planet bearing the name of Expiation. I shall tell you more about this Lentrohemsenin, since the information about him will help you to understand better the strange psyche of those three brain beings who exist on that peculiar remote planet. But I shall speak of Lentrohemsenin only after I have told you all about the very saintly Ashad Shemash, since the information about this now most saintly individual and his activities in relation to this planet of yours is of the utmost importance and value for deepening your understanding of the strangeness of the psyche of the three-brain beings who please you and who breed on the planet Earth.